So today we will be discussing from the Bhagavad Gita, verse 2.8. Bhagavad Gita verse 2.8 is one of the last verses spoken by Arjuna when he surrenders to Krishna. So, nahi prapashyami mama panudyad yachokamuchyoshanamindriyanam avapya bhumam asaptanam ruddham rajyam suranam apichadhipatyam. So Krishna is being addressed by Arjuna over here, and he is telling nahi prapashyami mama panudyad. Pashyami means to see, prapashyami means to see properly. I am not able to see that the ashokam, the shoka is the misery, uchoshanam indriyanam, which is drying up my senses. That this shoka which is drying up my senses, avapya bhuma asaptanam ruddham. That even if I get, bhuma is a kingdom as great as the entire earth, rajyam suranam apichadhipatyam. So either I may get the earth or even I may get the kingdom of the heavens. But still that will not satisfy me. So the theme which we are going to discuss today is the need for the shelter of the Guru. Without taking shelter of the Guru, everything else that we may do cannot satisfy us. We absolutely need the surrender of the and the guidance of the spiritual master. So the Bhagavad Gita has a very dramatic setting. It is, as we know, happening. It is the only work of philosophy in all the books of wisdom in the world which are spoken on a battle, which is spoken on a battlefield. The Bhagavad Gita, Shripad Madhavacharya explains that the Itihasas and the Puranas can be understood at three different levels. One is at a historical level, where we understand that the narratives which took place in ancient history, and just by hearing about those narratives, we benefit from them. Because these are not just activities of any mundane politician or any mundane battle. It is a historic battle which involved the Supreme Lord, and whatever the Supreme Lord does is purifying, and because of that, whatever the pastimes are given in the Itihasas and Puranas, they are history, but they are history permeated with divinity. In fact, they are eternity manifesting through history. Krishna's pastimes are eternal and they manifest through the medium of history. So just hearing them is purifying. That's the first level, historical. The second level is ethical. Ethical means we can learn moral lessons from these pastimes. Okay, this is in this situation, this was the way this particular person behaved. And we see how Duryodhana made wrong choices. And similarly, Ravana made wrong choices. Vibhishan made the right choice. So by these right and wrong choices, we learn ethics. Ethics means it is the branch of knowledge which deals with right and wrong. Ethics, a simpler word for ethics is morality. So we can learn ethical lessons from it. And the third level is metaphorical. Metaphorical means that Hare Krishna, SRM voice. Hare Krishna. So the Bhagavad Gita, as I was explaining, has can be understood at a historical, ethical and metaphorical level. Metaphorical level means that all of us don't have to go and fight a battle and we have to decide whether I should fight a fight with my relatives or not. Most of us are unlikely to have that situation in our life. But does that mean that the Gita is no longer relevant to us? No, the Gita represents also a battle of consciousness. You know, consciousness is like Kurukshetra, and we are fighting a war. And Krishna will guide us to overcome our lower desires. Now, Srila Prabhupada strongly condemned this explanation on if it was used as a substitute for historical explanation. Now, there were some Indian thinkers who were uncomfortable with the idea that God caused a war. And so they said that the Bhagavad Gita is not at all a historical event. The Kurukshetra war is not at all a historical event. It's only a metaphorical event. It's a war within the consciousness. And Prabhupada strongly condemned that. So Madhvacharya also mentions that the maximum benefit can be received from the historical and the ethical understanding. And the metaphorical understanding should be always in addition, not a substitute. That means, just like we understand in the Ramayana, Sita was actually there in the forest and Ravana came and actually abducted her. Now there is a Lakshman Rekha story which indicates that, which is like for us, the regulative principles. If we break them, then Maya will abduct us. So this is an additional meaning. It is not a substitute meaning. It is not that there was no Sita and there was no Ravana, and it is just symbolic. So no, symbolism may be there, but symbolism is not a substitute for the literal understanding. It is an addition to literal understanding. So same way, in the Bhagavad Gita, we learn a very important lesson. Actually, the transition that happens to Arjuna's mindset in the first chapter is remarkable. As we know, in the first chapter, he has already come ready to fight the war. And while he is ready to fight the war, suddenly he has a completely mental breakdown. A complete mental breakdown. What causes that breakdown? It is Pratyaksha Pramana. So, in the 21st verse, Arjuna tells Krishna, Senayor Ubhayor Madhye Ratham Sthapayamme Achyuta Yavadeta Nirikshaham Yodhukaman Avasthitan. So, O Krishna, please place me between the two armies so that Nirikshaham, I can see Yodhukaman Avasthitan, so that I can see who has come here to fight. So, in that series of verses, Krishna uses, Arjuna uses the word Aksha. I want to see Yotsamanan Avekshaham. So the next verse, this is verse 21 and 22. 23rd verse is again Yotsamanan Avekshaham. I want to see who is it that has come to assist the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra. And then Krishna takes the two chariots between his chariot between the two armies, and then is described in verse 25. Bhishma Drona Pramuktaha Sarvesham Cha Mahikshitam Vacha Partha Pashyaitan Samavetan Kuruniti. So here also the same word comes, Pashya, to see. So Arjuna's fall down happens because of a over-reliance on Pratyaksha Pramana. So he says, I want to see, I want to see. And it's remarkable, in verse 23, he is using the word that who are those people who are assisting this evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra? But suddenly, from verse 26, he starts seeing them not as those assisting in his enemies, he starts seeing them as Acharyan Matulan Bhatran Sarvan Bandhu Navasthitan. In 27th verse it is said, now they are all my relatives and friends, they are all my acquaintances. I have affection for all of them. So now if we think about it, obviously Arjuna knew earlier that those who are fighting him are his relatives. They are his friends to some extent, at least nominally. So then it is not that earlier he didn't know and it is news for him, oh, my relatives are over there. But the point is, his perception changes his mindset. Because he sees all his relatives present over there, he gets overwhelmed. And he said, these are my relatives, how can I kill them? So, the first mistake that Arjuna does is, he over-relies on pratyaksha. By over-relying on pratyaksha, he becomes overwhelmed. He no longer sees things spiritually, he starts seeing things materially. And he says, oh, these are all my relatives, how can I fight with them? And then, Arjuna does the second thing. He uses the second means for acquiring knowledge, that is Anuman. And then, practically, from that verse onwards, Arjuna starts speaking in verse 28. So 27 is describing Krishna, Sarvan Bandhu Navasin. So 28 to 46 is actually Arjuna speaking. And Arjuna is actually doing Anuman. He is simply speculating. And actually he does good speculation in one sense. Good in the sense that you can see that he is using his reasoning. But his reasoning is against the purpose of Krishna. And he gives four different reasons why he should not fight. So the first reason is noble. See, generally, when somebody wants to go away from Krishna, Krishna consciousness is transcendental. And one doesn't go fall immediately to sense gratification. So, just as some boys who become devotees, then the first thing they say is, oh, I have a lot of studies to do. Therefore I cannot practice Krishna consciousness. And then first it is studies, and gradually, okay, studies are there, but my friends are calling me for party. And you go for parties. And then after going for parties, then you go down further, a person goes down further. He says, you know, okay, I have to go to some pubs and things like that. And the person becomes totally degraded. So we see Arjuna's reasons for not fighting start from a noble reason, compassion. So the verses, I do not see any benefit in killing my kinsmen. The verse 31 is talking about compassion. How can I kill my relatives? And why should I kill them? They are all my relatives. And I'm not. Then after that, this compassion reason keeps coming. Second reason he talks about is enjoyment. If all my relatives are killed, then how will I enjoy? Kim no rajena govinda, kim bhogaira jivitenava. Yesham arthe kaanchitam no rajyam bhoga sukhanicha. That if those relatives with whom I am supposed to enjoy, if they go away, how can I actually, if they are not there, how can I enjoy? So his second reason is coming down more. You know, first was in the mode of goodness, compassion. Second is now enjoyment. And then he starts thinking further that if all the women are killed, then if I kill my relative, I'll get sinful reaction. So the 36th verse is giving the reason of sinful reactions. And like that it goes on. And then he said from 40 to 42, he gives another reason, destruction of family traditions. Oh, if the Kshatriyas are killed, there will be no one to protect them. If nobody want to protect them, the women will be unprotected. When the women are unprotected, then they will be tempted and misled and polluted, and that pollution of the women will lead to undesirable progeny, and when there is undesirable progeny, that will cause chaos in society. So he gives the fourth reason, destruction of family traditions. But at the end of it all, in 46th verse, he just sits down and he says, I cannot fight. Visruj sacharam japam shoka samvigna manasa. In the 46th verse is described Visrujya. Visrujya means to give up. What does Arjuna give up? Sa sharam chapam. He gives up his sharam. He gives up his bow and his arrow. And what does he do? Shoka samvigna manasa. His mind is filled with shoka. And he says, I will not fight. And the next chapter it will come now. Na yodhsyaiti govinda Uktva tushnim babuaha, I will not fight. So now, Krishna initially starts by trying to give a, by giving a pep talk to Arjuna. Sometimes some friend has come who is a little depressed. Hey, I didn't get good marks in my exam and it seems my Vaiva teacher is biased against me and he's always wanting to find faults in me and give me less marks and I don't know how I'm going to go ahead in my life. So some other friend will come, come on, cheer up. You know, you have got guts, man. You can achieve. Just keep fighting. Sometimes things go wrong, but they will go right. Keep fighting. So generally, this is the level of encouragement that is given in material life. There is no philosophical enlightenment. There is just the desire. Keep fighting. Like the Hindi song was there. Hum honge kamyab ek din. So yes, we'll be victorious one day. So Krishna does that sort of encouragement to Arjuna. First. So in verses 2 and 3 of the second chapter, he tells Arjuna, hey, you are a tough kshatriya. Why are you behaving like a shudra? You know, he uses two words, shudram hrudaya daurbalyam. He says that, how are you acting weakly like a kshatriya? And then he uses another even stronger word, klaibhyam masmagamha partha. Klaibhya actually means impotent. Yeah, now, impotent is a very strong word. So both these words, Kshudra and Klaibya, come in 2.3. Krishna speaks his first full words in 2.2. So 2.2 and 2.3, Krishna is encouraging Arjuna by giving a pep talk. And he says, you are a great Kshatriya. Don't act in this way. This is entirely unbecoming to you. And the Klaibya means impotent. So impotent can literally mean powerless. Impotent can also refer to one's virility. One sexual potency. Now there is a jab over there for Arjuna. Now Arjuna, just before the Kurukshetra battle, during the Ajnatavas, when he was staying in Virat, had become a eunuch. A eunuch is a member of the third sex who is impotent. So Krishna is, and that was a very, in one sense, mortifying or humiliating experience for a kshatriya who is virile and powerful, to have to take the role of a eunuch. But Arjuna took that because that was necessary for the Ajnatavas. That is how it had worked out. It's a long story because of the curse of the heavenly damsel. This had happened. Urvashi had cursed him because he had very gallantly refused to consort with her, seeing her to be the wife of his ancestor Yayati. So at that time, she had cursed Arjuna, saying that, you know, you are not ready to satisfy, you are a kshatriya and you are not ready to satisfy a woman. I curse you that you will become impotent. So Arjuna went to Indra and told all this to him. Indra is like the father of Arjuna. So Indra told him, don't worry. This is all the part of the plan and you will not become permanently impotent. But there will be temporary impotency which will be of great help to you. So, and what was the that he became temporarily eunuch for 1 year during the Ajnatavas. And Arjuna otherwise was such a well-known kshatriya that it would have been impossible for him to hide. Anybody could have spotted him. But that eunuch Brihanalla was somebody, nobody would have suspected that a glorious kshatriya like Arjuna would ever become a eunuch. So that's how he was able to hide. So there's a very important lesson that if a devotee practices sense control, and if the sense control seems to get the devotee into greater trouble, like Arjuna very heroically refused the temptation of Urvashi and it seemed he got a curse in return instead of a reward. But we should know that when we resist temptations, even if immediately the things seem to become problematic, in the long run they will be much more beneficial for us. So with respect to our context, verse 2.3, Krishna gives a jab to Arjuna by calling him Klaibya. Because, oh Arjuna, you acted like a eunuch over there last year, but have you become a real eunuch? Have you lost all your kshatriya prowess that you are not ready to fight? And then Arjuna counters back and he says, hey, I am not a coward, I am a very thoughtful person. How could I kill my elders? Would you kill Sandipani Muni or will you kill Ugrasena, your own grandfather? If you cannot kill them, then you are Arisudana. You are the killer of the enemies. Then why you don't kill your relatives, then why are you asking me to kill my relatives? If you won't kill your spiritual master Sandeepa Mani Muni, why are you asking me to kill my martial teacher, Dronacharya? If you won't kill Ugrasen, your grandfather, why are you expecting me to kill my grandfather Bhishma? So in this way Arjuna counters back. In 2.4 and 5 Arjuna is still countering back, but in 2.6, you know, Arjuna's all his reasoning has got him nowhere, and that is the fifth reason too. The fifth reason for Arjuna not fighting comes in verse 2.6. Nachaitad vidma katarano gariyo yadva jaye mayadivano jayeyo yane vahatva najji vishamas te avastita pramukhe dhartarashtra. So he says, I do not know what is good for me. Should I fight or should I not fight? If I fight, I lose all my relatives. If I don't fight, I lose the kingdom and I'm disgraced. What should I do? And then, not knowing what to do, Arjuna surrenders to Krishna. So 2.7 is a famous verse which describes Arjuna's surrender. There it is described, Karpanyadoshopahatasvabhava Pruchhami tvam dharma samudhacheta Shreyasyanishchitam bruhitanme Shishyaste ham shadhimam tvam prapannam. So there it's described that Arjuna is saying, I am overcome by miserly weakness. I do not know what to do. Therefore, Puchhami, I am asking you, Dharma sammoodhacheta, I am asking you that dharma which will lead to Shreya for me, which will lead to long-term benefit. Now, Vishwanath Chakra Thakur is one of our most prominent acharyas, and he, by his very lofty spiritual advancement, gets the revelation of what are the thoughts going on in the minds of Krishna and Arjuna when this conversation is happening. So he describes that when Arjuna says this, I surrender to you, so Krishna says, but I am your friend, I am not your spiritual master, why are you surrendering to me? You just fight and win the kingdom and things will be alright. He says, no. So, there Krishna is testing Arjuna by saying, come on, just fight. Buck up, man, fight. Everything will be alright. You will win the kingdom, then your grief will go away. So, Arjuna replies to that by the words which we are discussing today, 2.8. He says, no. What to speak of winning this kingdom of the earth, which I will win after defeating the Kauravas? Even if I win the heavenly kingdom, I will not be happy. Why I will not be happy? Because shoka, lamentation, is drying up my senses. Chokam uchoshanam indriyanam. It's a very beautiful phraseology. So, generally, when we talk about drying up anything, there is something that is liquid and that is dried up. For example, heat dries up the water that may be spilled on the floor. So Krishna is saying that Arjuna is saying that shoka, yachokam, uchoshanam. Uchoshanam means will dry up. The lamentation will dry up what? My senses, indriyanam. So now, the senses are not something liquid. How can lamentation dry up the senses? Here Krishna is telling, Arjuna is saying that actually the senses are also basically dead material objects. What activates the senses is energy, sensual energy or sensory vigor. So actually, when one is overcome by bad emotions, by negative emotions, then those emotions paralyze us physically. And there is one kind of paralysis which is physical paralysis. Physical paralysis means when the senses itself don't have the capacity to work. But there is another paralysis which is called as emotional paralysis. Emotional paralysis means that a person is so overwhelmed by his emotions that he feels like I can't do anything. Now a person gets depressed, and he gets from normal depression to clinical depression. He just feels, whatever I do, nothing works, I can't do anything. So the emotions dominate a person so much that his senses become inactive, his senses become paralyzed by that. So Arjuna is experiencing that sort of emotional paralysis. He says that this grief He's so great that yes, now the senses are active. He can walk, he can talk, he can shoot arrows. But when there is grief within the heart, one starts feeling, what is the point of doing all this? You know, sometimes if a student repeatedly gets bad results in exams, and then you tell him, come on, man, you can study. Kya fayda hai? What will happen by that? What is the use of it? So, what has happened is the energy of the senses, the desire to work has been dried up by the grief. So, same thing is happening to Arjuna. Yachokamuchoshanam indriyanam. The vigor of the senses is dried up by his grief. And therefore he says that the only person who can solve this grief is you, O Krishna. And he surrenders to Krishna. So, this is the means by which a soul also turns to Krishna. You know, generally, the nature of material life is that it creates perplexity sooner or later. The word perplexity means that there is a situation which we don't know how to solve, which we don't know how to deal with. If I do this, this will go wrong. If I do that, that will go wrong. And nothing seems to work out. Therefore, better let me not do anything. That's how a person starts thinking. So, actually, we need to focus in such a situation on the ultimate solution. So, in our life also, we will sooner or later come to such a situation where whatever we do will seem to go wrong. So, in modern management terminology, it is called as a lose-lose situation. If I do this also, things are wrong. If I do that also, things are wrong. Lose-lose situation. So, when a lose-lose situation comes up in a person's life, then he becomes very frustrated. So, at that time, we need to raise our consciousness to a higher level to solve the problem. You know, Einstein said that problems cannot be solved at the same level of awareness that created them. When I face a problem, if I try to keep my intelligence at the same level and try to solve that problem, it doesn't work. Because why doesn't it work? It may seem to work temporarily, but just like if an ant is moving along the floor and somebody just comes and keeps a huge wood block in front of it, now the ant doesn't know where that wood block has suddenly come from and how it has come and what it should do to cross over. It doesn't know how broad the wall is, how tall the wall is, and it may think, okay, let me just wait for this wall, this wood wall to go away. It may never go away. Or the wood wall may a little bit and move a little bit and crush the ant also. So the ant thinks in basically two dimensions. And this is a hypothetical example. And the wall is coming in from a third dimension. So like that, you know, when we live at a material level, one problem comes and we try to solve it. And we struggle, maybe we find a solution. We find a solution, we are happy. We don't find a solution, we are frustrated. But either way, even if that problem ends somehow, second problem comes, and third problem comes, and a fourth problem comes. And in this way, one keeps getting one problem after another. So, how long can one just keep fighting on? You know this. You know, material life, Darwin, no, notice this. That's why he said there is a struggle for existence. And he said you have to become fitter and fitter to combat the struggle for existence. But, you know, he said struggle for existence will be won by the principle of survival of the fittest. But, the fact is, even the fittest don't survive. Nobody survives in the struggle for material existence. So actually, what is the nature of the struggle? Struggle, and then die. Then grow old, get diseased and die. So, is this what material life is meant for? Not at all. Material life is meant for that, but we are not meant for that. We are meant to raise our consciousness to a spiritual level where we can become purified, illuminated, enlightened, and liberated. Of course, purified, when we take to spirituality, when we practice spiritual principles, our desires become purified. When we become purified, then we become illuminated. Satvat sanjayate jnanam. When you come to sattva-guna, that itself uses a broader perspective of life. And then, tadami buddhi yogam tam, we become enlightened. Krishna guides us from within. There is one kind of knowledge which comes from sattva-guna lifestyle. Another kind of knowledge which comes from, another deeper, greater kind of knowledge comes from Krishna's guidance within the heart. 10.10 at the Bhavita Krishna said. Then ultimately a devotee is liberated. He returns back to the spiritual world. So, as practicing devotees, all of us are going to face problems, whether we are devotees or non-devotees. And we need to do the needful to tackle the problem at a material level. But while tackling the problem at a material level, we should not let our consciousness stay at a material level. We raise our consciousness to a higher spiritual level and then do the needful at a material level. So, if I am walking on a street and there are big skyscraper buildings on that street, then now I'll feel I am so small and these buildings are so big. But if I am raised up and I am in an airplane and I may be in the same position vertically, I am in the same position from the point of view of the vertical dimension, but from the positionally, I may just move up straight. And what happens is those same buildings appear very small now. So, that's how Krishna consciousness raises our consciousness. And those problems which appear to be very big, when we get a long-term perspective of life, we understand, oh, these problems are not such a big deal to worry about. Let me just focus on practicing spiritual life. And let me try to serve Krishna. Krishna will solve this problem. And Krishna assures this in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita when he says, Machitta sarva durgani matrasadat tarishyasi atachetvam ahankaran nashroshyasi vinangshyasi. In 18.58 he describes, if you become conscious of me, machitta sarva durgani, all obstacles, mat prasadat tarishyasi, you will pass over all obstacles by my grace. Athachetvam ahankaran, if you don't hear me, if you act out of ahankar, you think, I know myself, I am good enough, I don't need God. Nashroshyasi, you don't hear me, vinangshyasi, you will be lost. Vinangshyasi is a related word, vinashyati. Vinash means destruction. So you will be lost, Krishna is telling. So all of us, we don't have to come to a crisis like Arjuna, where it's a complete emotional breakdown. From Arjuna's experience, we can learn the lesson. The lesson that a material life will eventually lead to a unsolvable perplexity. Material life will completely frustrate me eventually, and therefore, when that perplexity comes, we will have to take shelter of Krishna. But why delay that taking shelter of Krishna? Let us take it now only. Because who knows, at that time when we are emotionally overwhelmed, for Arjuna, Krishna was available right in front of him. But if we don't have the opportunity at that time somehow to take shelter of Krishna, why take the risk? So, right now we understand the nature of material life, understand the futility of solving problems through Pratyaksha and Anuman, we focus on Shabda. So generally speaking, we all of us have practical problems, but especially our morning program, rather than thinking of our practical problems, we focus on raising our consciousness. Chant Hare Krishna nightly, hear the class, dance in kirtans, participate in Mangala Arati. What is all this doing? All this is raising our consciousness. So from the mode of passion to the mode of goodness. From the modes of ignorance and passion to goodness and transcendence. And when our consciousness thus gets elevated through the modes, we can see things in a broader perspective, in a more calm way. And Krishna will give us guidance of how to solve the problems. See, sometimes we think that if I just think a lot about the problem, I'll solve the problem. Yes, we need to think, but we have to see how we are thinking about the problem. I'll conclude with this point. You know, sometimes somebody may just, like there is that saying which I quote in my book, Energy. There are three kinds of people. Some people make things happen, some people watch things happen, and some people wonder what happened. So actually this represents three modes. Now those who are in the goodness, they make things happen. yes, this is what I have to do and this is what I'll get done. And people are in the mode of passion, they watch things happen. You know, mode of passion person is very active. Although he's active, the problem with his being active is that he does one thing, but because he's acting in the mode of passion, 10 things go wrong. Ye kya ho gaya? Wo kya ho gaya? What is this? What has this happened? And he just gets completely overwhelmed. We watch things happen, and many times we have experience, we try to solve one problem and we end up creating 10 problems. That is the nature of action in the mode of passion. And the third is mode of ignorance. Some people wonder what happened. They don't understand only what is happening. They're just completely bewildered. So, as devotees, we don't want to be in the last two categories. Watch things happen or wonder what happened. We want to make things happen. And chanting Hare Krishna is the practical means. Remembering Krishna is the tangible spiritual technology to raise our consciousness. And after we raise our consciousness, we can see how can I deal with this problem from a broader spiritual perspective. And then with that guidance, which will come internally or externally, we'll be able to solve the problem. So now Krishna as the Paramatma is there in our hearts. But when we are too much in the mode of passion and ignorance, we cannot take his guidance. So therefore, initially, that Paramatma manifests to us externally as the spiritual master. When we take shelter of the spiritual master and take his guidance regularly, we are showing Krishna that I want your guidance and I'm ready to take it. I'm ready to mold my life according to your guidance. And when Krishna sees us doing that, then he starts guiding us from within the heart also. So first we take shelter of Krishna externally as the spiritual master. Later on, it is not that we reject the spiritual master, but when the spiritual master is not always available for us, then Krishna will guide us from within. So for us, the spiritual master's guidance is available through our senior devotees. It may be the counselor, facilitator, mentor, or senior Vaishnavas. And we take guidance, and guidance will make life very relatively uncomplicated and easy. Otherwise, our mind will make simple things complicated, and complicated things super complicated. And we will not be able to do anything practically in life. But if you take guidance, you shall do this, don't do this. Just follow it and you will see how your life will move forward in a tangible way. And we see that is what will happen to Arjuna. But of course, as devotees, we are not just interested in blind following. Okay, you're told to do this, do this. Arjuna is not a blind follower. Arjuna is an intelligent follower. That's why the whole Bhagavad Gita is spoken. And by the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is intellectually convinced. This is what Krishna is telling is the best for me. So even when we go to spiritual master, it's not that we follow him blindly, we follow him intelligently. We ask questions, get a clear understanding and then follow. So of course, sometimes the spiritual master may give us an instruction which just baffles our intelligence. It doesn't make sense. So at that time, so generally we should use our intelligence to follow the spiritual master. And we use our intelligence to understand. But during the general pattern, if occasionally the spiritual master gives an instruction which doesn't make sense to our intelligence, then we should know that I should put aside my intelligence also. So sometimes devotees have this confusion. When we go to our spiritual master, should we surrender our intelligence or should we surrender with intelligence? Surrender our intelligence means just put aside my intelligence and do what the spiritual master says. Or surrender with intelligence, use my intelligence. So actually, I'll explain. Surrender our intelligence means that whatever the spiritual master tells, I'll do that. So all of you know that story. That the spiritual master told, a disciple was following the spiritual master, was going in a cart, and the spiritual master and some belongings fell off from the cart. And the disciple just kept following. The spiritual master later said, hey, something fell out. Yes, I saw it falling out. Why did you pick it up? Oh, you had not told me to pick it. But you should use your common sense. It's valuable. Why didn't you pick it? No, I thought I should only follow your instructions, not do anything else. So, the spiritual master said, don't be so foolish. Okay, I'll give you a list. All these possessions are there in the cart. If any of it falls out, please pick it up. And then, after that, as the cart was moving, he said, okay, I'll do that. And then, after that, as the cart was moving along, suddenly there was a jerk, and the horse just waved, and what happened? The spiritual master himself fell off. And the cart kept moving forward, and the disciple kept moving forward. The spiritual master said, I have fallen down, help me get up. He says, you didn't instruct me to pick you up. He says, hey, what kind of fool are you? Use your common sense. So, generally when we follow the spiritual master, we should use our intelligence. So, surrender with intelligence. But there are some times where the spiritual master will tell us, do this, whatever happens. So, for example, Srila Prabhupada told his disciples, print all the volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita in 2 months. And from the printer's point of view, the publisher's point of view, they said, it's impossible. We don't have the printing machines, we don't have the devotees, we don't have the paper. It's impossible. Prabhupada told them, impossible is a word in the fool's dictionary. And then they realized that we have to do it. So then they adopted emergency procedures and did that. But Srila Prabhupada did not tell everybody to do everything like that all the time. So this was, we use our intelligence to follow the spiritual master. But in special situations, the spiritual master says, no, you have to do this. Then we surrender our intelligence also. So I'll summarize what we discussed. And we started by going overview of Bhagavad Gita. Before that, we discussed how the Bhagavad Gita can be understood at a historical, ethical, and metaphorical level. The metaphorical understanding should supplement the historical understanding, not substitute the historical understanding. And so we discussed how Arjuna's perplexity indicates the nature of pratyaksha and anuman. Arjuna says, I want to see, and then those who are his enemies, he starts thinking, oh, they are my relatives, how can I fight with them? So pratyaksha gives us wrong perceptions. And then anuman, he does his own reasoning, but the end, so we discussed the four reasons. Compassion, enjoyment, destruction of family traditions, and sinful reactions. But the end of all that reasoning is not confidence, but it's further diffidence. It's complete indecision. So in 2.6, he says, I don't know what to do. And then, so when pratyaksha doesn't work, anuman doesn't work. Then he surrenders to Shabda. And for him, Krishna is there to speak Shabda directly to him. And then when we discussed about turning to the spiritual master, we discussed about how problems, if we just try to battle with them at that same level of consciousness, it will be an endless battle. But if we raise our consciousness, then we'll be able to either solve the problem or transcend the problem or tolerate the problem. So all these three are wonderful. We transcend the problem, we tolerate it or solve it. So I give the example of a person on the ground next to skyscrapers and a person in a plane next to skyscrapers. So chanting and Krishna consciousness raises our consciousness from passion, ignorance to goodness and transcendence, by which we can deal with problems in a mature way. And lastly, we concluded by discussing that a devotee should surrender with intelligence. Normally speaking, we don't want blind followers. Krishna doesn't want blind followers. Surrender with intelligence. But in certain situations, the spiritual master insists, then we even surrender our intelligence. So surrender our intelligence with intelligence. That is the solution. So thank you very much. Is there any one question? Or are we too late? Yes? Yes, please tell me. Generally speaking, the question is that, you know, when we have great respect for the spiritual master, we can follow his instructions. But sometimes the instruction may not come from somebody as advanced as a spiritual master, but it may come from some other authority for whom we may not have so much respect. So generally speaking, even the local authorities will not give us a instruction as impossible as that. So every authority will give instruction according to the adhikar that they have. So if sometimes we feel that an instruction is very difficult to follow, then we can clarify, this doesn't make so much sense to me, I feel it is impractical. Or we can confirm that instruction with a further senior authority. So generally speaking, I'll talk from both ways. You know, the authority should always give instructions according to the adhikar of the authority. You know, the Prabhupada can tell devotees, impossible is the word dictionary in the world in the dictionary of fools. You know, can we tell this to our subordinates and make them do very difficult things? It's unlikely that we will be able to do that, but generally in such a situation, if that instruction has come from a higher authority, for example, you know, very big program is there and we have to do huge amount of management for that and we may have to stay awake late night and things like that. So it's impossible to do this program, to do all the management. No, it has to be done. Then better we get, the authority should get that instruction reinforced from some senior authority, so that the subordinates will be inspired to follow that instruction. And from the subordinates' point of view, at one level, we should, if we feel the instruction is very impractical or very difficult, we can get that instruction confirmed from a higher authority. At another level, if the instruction is not philosophically wrong, it is philosophically correct, but just that our conditionings are preventing us from practicing it, then we can understand that yes, I have faith in my spiritual master, and I may not have so much faith in my immediate authority, but my spiritual master has faith in this immediate authority. That's why my spiritual master has put this authority here. Otherwise, my spiritual master would not have put this person here. So we can follow our local authority, not because of faith in that authority, but because of faith in our spiritual master and faith in our spiritual master's judgment in trusting this authority. So that way, we should know that even when we are following our local authority, we are following our spiritual master. And it is not necessarily that we are trusting that local authority, we are trusting our spiritual master by following that authority also. So, does that answer your question? Okay. So, we will stop here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavinda ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bo. Hare Krishna.